Hi, this is Jack Canfield from The Secret, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Want to make your life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey, David here, and welcome to the Kick-Ass Life Show. And, this idea of a kick-ass life, the idea of truly, truly amplifying your life in such a beautiful way and to truly be able to, I say, look at your life and know that all areas, relationships, financially, physically, emotionally, that in your adventures, that you truly do lead an extraordinary life. And remember, some of you are just starting out on that journey. These concepts can be new. The concept of a kick-ass life, the concept that we have control, the concept that we can truly have whatever we want. Remember, you know, it's impossible to discover new oceans unless we have the courage to lose sight of the shore, which means that we're going to have to let go of what we currently have and move into new realms. And so, you know, I want you to listen to this song, and I want you to think, again, you can use the word woman here instead of man, but I really love this idea of responsibility and the idea of the man in the mirror.
Disregard a broken bottle top and a one-man flow. They follow each other on the wind, you know, 'cause they got nowhere to go. That's why no one got to know. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. I'm asking him to change his way.
That's right. You want to make a change in the world, take a look at yourself. And that's what this is all about, taking a look at yourself. I am entering into a new chapter with my work right now. I really want to get writing. I've got a lot of books laying inside of me. So I'm going to be choosing to bring back some shows. So on this particular day, you're going to be listening to some shows that I've aired in the past. Some of my favorite shows that have just really beautiful content. And again, that will free up a little bit more time for me to be able to write right now. But don't worry, I'm still going to be coming to you with a brand new show every single week that you can enjoy, that will allow us to amplify our lives and amplify the way that we walk through the world, amplify our results and our finances, and truly, really, really live a kick-ass life. So with that being said, I hope you enjoyed today's show. And don't forget, again, I'll have a 30-minute show for you every week where we'll delve into and truly explore everything that you need to explore to truly live a kick-ass life.
So I wanted to ask you a question. This, we all understand that leaders are readers. And you'd mentioned to me yesterday that Bill Gates had mentioned that if he could have one superpower, it would be the power to read faster. And then Warren Buffett, a quote, he says he sort of wasted 10 years of his life reading slowly. And you know, talk to me a little bit about that, you know, this whole idea about reading and the importance of being able to absorb and read and take information more quickly. What does that all mean?
Well, I know, David, you know, leaders are readers, as you know, and that knowledge is not only power, knowledge is profit. And I don't mean just the financial profit. I mean all the treasures in all the areas of your life. And what I love about reading is that if somebody has spent decades of their life becoming an expert at something and they put it into a book, and you could sit down in an afternoon or a couple of days and you could read that book, then you could compress literally decades into days. You could download decades into days, and saves you so much time, so much energy, so much money, and be able to shortcut that. And that's what I love about reading. You know, one of those things that we talk about is being able to read a book a week, you know, a book a week, which is about, you know, 52 books a year. That's extraordinary, with the average person only reading about a book and a half a year. And so I do believe that, you know, who we are comes down to the people we spend time with, the books that we read, the seminars that we go to. And we always have to stand guard, you know, to the doors of our own mind. And I love reading so much because, you know, knowledge, an idea that's, you know, implemented that could be used right now. There's books out there that literally could solve any problem that you have, you know, any an area of health or relationships, your finances, your business. And the challenge is people don't have the time to read it. Or from a lot of people, they're just, you know, reading for them is a chore. You know, I don't know if, you know, if, you know, you have books on your shelf you haven't read yet, you have more than 10 emails.
Yeah, I do.
Say, of course, there's different studies that reading and handling paperwork and emails, it's the biggest time waster in a person's day. That literally you're spending 3 or 4 hours a day that you need to read. What if you could cut that in half and save 2 hours a day? You know, 2 extra hours a day, what would you do with those 2 hours? I mean, even an hour a day over the course of a year is like 365 hours. That's a lot of time. Mm. That's a lot of productivity. I mean, that's how many 40-hour work weeks is that? That's like 9 40-hour work weeks. That's like over two months, you know, at every year just by reading a little bit faster than people are. But the challenge is most of us, you know, we live in a time, an age of information, an age of overwhelm. You know, we're in this knowledge economy where knowledge is power, you know, but how do we spend the time to learn that information and learn it well, learn it with greater speed, right? But with better, you know, strength, with greater comprehension, with greater comprehension and retention also.
Well, you know, I just want to ask you a question because you said something which really struck me about standing guard on our mind. And there's so much information coming at us every single day. You know, there's so much junk, there's so much nonsense, there's so much stuff that we don't really need in there. How invasive is that? You know, and what do we do about that?
Well, one of the challenges, I mean, it's one of the biggest challenges people face. You know, when I do these kind of trainings, whether it's at Harvard or Virgin or different other institutions, you know, leadership training, you know, leadership learning kind of thing, this overwhelm is something that's extremely pervasive and it's pretty permanent too. They say the amount of information now doubles every year or so. And in fact, President of Google said that the amount of information since the dawn of humanity to the year 2003, think about all that data, that amount of information now is created every 2 days.
Wow.
I mean, every 48 hours, and you feel it, right? I mean, when I do talks in front of, you know, health people in healthcare, they call it information fatigue syndrome, because everything's a syndrome right now, right? I mean, higher blood pressure, more stress, more sleeplessness, you know, compression of leisure time, or if people have time, they can't even enjoy it as deeply as they really should because their mind is still multitasking, you know, with everything that's going on in the world. And it's creating health issues, it's creating, you know, problems in people's relationships. It's kind of, you know, keeping their business stagnant, keeping them from growing because they're just handling this kind of overwhelm and overload all the time. They can't really focus on things that are most important.
I know you talk about when people have fun reading, that learning becomes joyful and easier to do. So this idea then, if we're looking at this invasive world where information is bombarding us all the time and overwhelming us without us really knowing, I think it's happening in a way that, you know, for me personally, you know, I attempt not to be overwhelmed by it, but I still, you know, there's, you know, every time your phone dings, it's so easy to pick it up and have a look at it, right? So this idea then, if we get back to the idea of being able to read and have fun with it and read a lot of information and retain it easily, is reading then, does it become one of the safeguards of the mind? Is it one way that we can really block out all of the other junk coming at us by condensing that time into reading?
I think it definitely helps. I mean, one of the challenges people tell me, you know, why they don't spend enough time reading the things that they really want to read as opposed to things they feel like they have to read is because they read, they feel like they're reading poorly, if that makes sense. And so it's one of those things where the lack of education, you know, one of the biggest challenges that we face in this 21st century is we've all grew up with a 20th century education, which prepared us for a world that simply doesn't exist anymore. You know, it was very assembly line, cookie cutter, you know, one size fits all, you know, where you sit, you know, in a classroom and you're supposed to just absorb the information that the teacher is teaching you. And you're not supposed to talk to your neighbor. You're supposed to read silently to yourselves. And, you know, today's day and age, learning doesn't have four walls. right? You know, your ability to be able to, you know, do the things that you want to do in the world, to be able to be, do, have, share, and you know, give in the world has, you know, a lot to do with this 3 pound of matter between our ears called our brain. The challenge with our brain is it doesn't come with an owner's manual. You know, you could get, you know, any kind of new device, whether it's, you know, new technology or anything, it always comes with this owner's manual, you know, but your brain is so much more complex and can do so many different things. The challenge is just we're not shown how to use it and it's not taught. So I learned really early on that school taught me, you know, what to learn, you know, math and history and science and Spanish, but they didn't always show us how to learn. They were like, there was no class on listening. There's no classes on thinking. There's no classes certainly on speed reading or memory or how to learn things faster, how to be able to improve your concentration, improve your focus. And I think one of the most important skills to master in the 21st century to be able to catch up, keep up, and get ahead is the ability to learn rapidly.
Hmm. So, you know, let's take myself, for example. You know, I left school at 15. I was notoriously, I mean, I could hardly read and write when I left school. I read my first book when I was 18, and I was a day in the life of Ivan Dabanovich, I think it was, you know, it was this incredible little book, but I just remember then falling in love with reading, but really, really slow. Someone like myself, I come to you and say, hey, Jim, you know, I'm just this pathetic reader, and I love to read, but I really struggle with this whole thing, you know, I'm really, is this, you know, the information you share, and obviously, you know, with some of the great companies in our world, and some of the great leaders in our world come to you for the work that you do. I mean, is this anyone of any background, of any education level, can anyone get this?
Yeah, so that's a big thing. You know, when people see me on stage, you know, I always do some kind of shock and awe up front, kind of memory demonstration or some kind of mental feat where I'll memorize a room full of people's names, or they'll pass around a microphone and shout out, you know, your different numbers, and I'll memorize a 50 or 100 digit number or a list of random words. But my message there after I do it successfully is I don't do this to impress you. I do this to express to you what's really possible. Because at once upon a time, I wasn't able to do this, that this is a trained skill. And it doesn't really matter, you know, your age, your background, your career, your diet, your level of education, your current financial situation, you know, your gender, your level of health, your intelligence. It really doesn't, I mean, everyone can improve, you know, and that's my fundamental belief. I believe that everybody has genius inside of them, that you have gifts, you have strengths, you have life experience, intelligence that you're not even aware of. It's not even like, you know, if someone is smart or not, or, you know, specifically, you know, if someone is smart, it's really how they're smart. And my work is all about helping people awaken that genius. It's all about transcendence, transcending, meaning ending the trance. You know, there's this mass hypnosis here that you're weak, you know, that you have all these limits, that you're frail. And I'm here to say that you're not powerless. You have an unbelievable strength that you're given. If you want to improve your self-esteem overnight, just study your brain. I mean, it is the most amazing supercomputer on the planet. You know, we're in the millennium of the mind. And today we're not paid for our brute strength. We're paid for our brain strength. You know, we're not paid for our muscle power. We're paid for our mind power in today's day and age. It doesn't matter if you're an employee or you're an entrepreneur. You know, you're building an organization and you're making it happen. You know, your greatest source of wealth lies between your ears. And so I would say that, you know, when we're talking about specifically for reading, it's not a matter of intelligence. Reading is a skill. Like none of us were born with the ability to read, right? Like even myself, I wasn't born in the hospital. I didn't like crawl out to the waiting room and start speed reading magazines.
Jack and Jill in 30 seconds.
Exactly. So it's a skill, but the biggest, you know, I always tell people there are 5 obstacles to effective reading. And this is important because effective reading I classify as somebody who could read fast but also comprehend, because it doesn't make sense to have one without the other. So you always have those 2 components, you know. But, you know, speed reading over time, depending on, you know, who you talk to, has been misrepresented or just, it's been kind of associated more with skimming and scanning and getting the gist of what they read. And, you know, a lot of our clients, they're business owners, they're financial advisors, they're doctors, they're, you know, they're lawyers. And I don't think you want your lawyer, your doctor, your financial advisor just to get the gist of what he or she reads, right? That wouldn't be a good thing. So maybe because I do memory training, I find it doesn't make sense to read something if you're not going to understand it. But a lot of people, you know, who've had different experiences with speed reading, they think it's just kind of skimming. And, you know, there's a Woody Allen quote that says, I took a speed reading class. I read War and Peace. It's about Russia. And you don't want to read a 1,000-page book and just kind of work out with one idea. So I say there's five, you know, obstacles, and I could go through them really quick.
Yeah, this sure, is basically sure. Yeah.
This is basically what keeps the majority of the people reading slowly. And if you want to be a faster reader, if you want to be able to read two or three times faster, more effectively, you have to overcome these five things. So the first one, topical to your question, is what keeps people from reading slowly or not understanding what they read is lack of education. Just like we talked about, you're not born with the ability to read, just like you're not born with the ability to ski or to type or drive a car. It's a skill. And like all skills, it could be learned. But the challenge is when's the last time you took a class called reading? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like how old are you? You know, probably, you know, 6, 7 years old, yeah. 8 years old. And, you know, not like a college lit class, but an actual class called reading. And, you know, I ask you is, the question I would ask is, has the amount of reading you have to do, has that increased a little bit since you're 8 years old? You know, has the difficulty increased a little bit or a whole lot since then? And but how we actually read, the majority of people, they still read exactly the same ways as when they were eight. And that's a big challenge. So the first thing is lack of education. Second obstacle to effective reading is a big one. Is something called focus, lack of focus. You know, have you ever read something, David, like get to the end of it and just forgot what you just read?
It happens to me all the time. I'll read a whole page and I think, what was that about? Because my mind's somewhere else. It happens to me all the time.
Exactly. Or you're reading something online, you're going through your emails, you just can't concentrate. Or you have to prepare for a meeting, or let's say you have to give a presentation in front of a group, or you have a one-on-one, and you can't concentrate. And I think lack of education, people say that, you know, they have ADD or ADHD or they have, you know, entrepreneur, you know, attention kind of thing, whether it's all over the place. I think the challenge with focus is for a lot of people think that if I ask them to read faster, that what would happen to their comprehension? They would think it would go down, right? If I asked you to read faster. But in actuality, you know, as we test thousands of people every single year, the faster readers tend to have better comprehension because they have better focus. And so I don't know if it's a myth or a rumor being spread around by slow readers that faster readers have comprehension.
I started it.
You're the one. So it's you know what, and I'll tell you why too, and this is in general, but it's pretty accurate, is because people read so slowly. Your brain is this unbelievable supercomputer. It can handle so much information. But when you read something, you feed it one word at a time. And notice even when I'm talking that slowly, which is hard for me to do, it's like if I talk like that for the next 10 minutes, you wouldn't pay any attention to what I'm saying because you'd be thinking about everything else. Your mind would naturally wander. And that's what happens when people read. You know, it's kind of like you're metaphorically starving your brain, your mind. And if you don't give your brain the stimulus it needs, it'll seek entertainment elsewhere in the form of distraction. You know, so the reason why a lot of people do not have the comprehension is because they don't have the focus. And the reason they don't have the focus is because they're reading so painfully slow that they're boring themselves. And then their mind, especially their right brain, needs that creativity, that imagination, and starts thinking about everything else, you know, having to do with your life. You know, it starts daydreaming about the bills or the kids or, you know, everything, or the clients or anything else. It's kind of like driving, right? It's kind of like if you're driving 20 or 30 miles an hour, you're not really focused on driving, right? You could be like, what are you doing? You're drinking your Starbucks, you're on the phone, you're texting even though you know you shouldn't. You're thinking about the dry cleaning, talking to someone next to you. You know, you could be doing six different things.
Were you in my car yesterday?
Plus, recently shaved on the highway. when you're in traffic or going slow, you six different things. But it's kind of like when people read slow, they start doing other things. But if you're, let's say you're racing a car and you're taking hairpin turns at 110 miles an hour, you know, do you have more or less focus? I guarantee you, you're not trying to text or thinking about the dry cleaning, you know, kind of thing. And so the speed gives you the focus. You know, for me, reading slowly is kind of like riding a bike really slow. You know, like if you go too slow, you're just going to wobble and kind of
fall off.
That's the challenge. Third obstacle to effective reading, and this is the big one. People think it's focus, but this is the one. It's something called sub-vocalization. Sub-vocalization. And what it means is you can just kind of break down the words. You know, have you ever noticed that, you know, when you're reading something to yourself, David, you hear that inner voice inside your head reading along with you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hopefully it's your own voice.
Sometimes it's my mother's.
I hear someone else's voice or three voices in there. That's what they call sub-vocalization. You know, vocal meaning your speech, sub meaning under or inner, that's your inner speech. And the reason why I say it's your third obstacle to effective reading is that if you have to say all the words to yourself while you read inside your head or out loud, then you could only read as fast as you could speak. That makes sense, right? That means, to say it another way, your reading speed is limited to your talking speed and not your thinking speed. So the average person reads, they rate reading speed just like they do kind of like typing speed in words per minute. So the average person reads about, you know, 180 to like maybe about 240 words per minute. But, you know, people could read so much faster than that. But what slows them down is saying the words. Like if you look at a word like computer or library, do you need to be able to pronounce that word in order to understand it? You know, the answer is no, right? It's just kind of like these words you've seen thousands and thousands of times, and you don't have to pronounce them. They're what they call sight words. Sight words are words you know by sight. It's kind of like, you know, if you see a sign, a stop sign on the corner of the road, you know, that red sign with eight sides to it, you know, you don't say to yourself, stop. But I guarantee you comprehend exactly what it means every single time you're driving. And that's how people could read faster, is they don't pronounce the words, because you don't have to pronounce it to understand it. And
just a question on that. So 180 to 240 words per minute was, you know, the speed that we could read at. How fast could we read if we're using a speed reading method? What's the difference in speed?
Well, it depends what kind of, you know, research you kind of base it on. I mean, in the Guinness Book of World Records, the fastest reader is at 25,000 words, which is 25,000 words a minute.
What?
Yeah. Which is, okay, so I wouldn't say that's the case. I mean, obviously, you know, we're in between what most people read and that level in terms of what people say is possible. But there, I've seen studies saying that people are able to read, I mean, actually read at 1,000 words a minute. There's a difference between reading and skimming, though, right? You know, in terms of comprehension.
Yeah, because one thing with you, everything you talk about is really, in the end, it's not skimming. This is about comprehension.
Exactly.
When you read it, you understand it. You can talk about it and articulate it afterwards and really have a conversation about it, right?
Exactly. When I take people through our quick reading program, you know, our company's called Quick Learning. We do programs on reading called Quick Reading, memory programs called Quick Recall, thinking programs called Quick Thinking. Because I think the speed is very important in today's day and age, that the information is coming at us kind of like it's trying to take a sip, you know, of water out of a fire hose. You know, and how do you keep up? And so what we do is we do this big brain upgrade for people so they can handle more information, so they could, you know, do the things that they need to. And so when we're talking about reading, everything I'm talking about is comprehension. Because it doesn't make sense to read something fast if you're not going to understand it. And also, it assumes that you can understand it in the first place. Like, if you don't speak French, speed reading French doesn't really help, right? Reading it faster is probably not going to help you. So it's not a magic pill, but there's a magic process for doing so. But, you know, certainly 500 words, 600, 700, 800 words per minute is very doable. And it's not the thousands and the tens of thousands that, you know, some people claim it might be. But it's very reasonable for the average person to be able to achieve that. And just going from 200 words a minute to, you know, 400 words per minute, that's a huge jump in productivity, right?
Absolutely.
Something in half the time and get the same, if not more, value out of it and comprehension and retention out of it. You know, I mean, even before smart reading, speed reading, is I focus on smart reading. You know, just even if you're not going to read it faster, how do you get more out of it? because a lot of people read something and they don't remember a lot of stuff that they read. And that's a tragedy. You know, if you own your own business and you want to be able to do more and leverage your mental assets, you know, you don't want to read something or go to a seminar and then 2 days later forget everything that you learned, you know, which is often the case. And you don't want to buy all these books and great, you know, tapes. Like I say tapes because they're kind of, you know, dating yourself. But, you know,
VHS.
MP3s and well, books especially, because then, you know, books sit on your shelf. And then instead of it becoming, you know, self-help, it becomes shelf help, right? And then that doesn't help either. So what we're talking about here with sub-vocalization is mitigating, reducing the amount of self-talk that we're actually saying. And then the last two obstacles to effective reading, a fourth one I'll say is regression. Regression. Another word for regression, David, is backskipping. You know, I don't know if you've ever found yourself going back and rereading words, or you're reading a book and then you reread the same line over again. And, you know, some people will say, we'll regress or backskip in anywhere from 20 to 30% just unconsciously, you know, or some people will do it consciously and they think it's going to help their comprehension. But it's kind of like watching a movie. Let's say you've been really looking forward to watching this movie. You're playing it on your DVD player, on your flat screen, and somebody there in the corner has a remote control, and every 30 seconds they kind of rewind it. You know, that would be kind of annoying, right? But that's kind of what we're doing when we're reading. And it doesn't even help with the comprehension. It just breaks up the rhythm and the flow.
Well, it's interesting though, because I do that quite a lot, and there's that feeling I had before speaking to you that was helping. Obviously, it doesn't.
It's one of the things that just kind of breaks up your overall comprehension. In fact, you know, sometimes when you read faster, you could actually get to the main points and the author's ideas a lot quicker, as opposed to going slowly. You know, it's like kind of like the simple example is you're reading, if you read really slow, it's not like you're looking at letters. It would be ludicrous to kind of look at like an H and then an O and then a T and then a D and an O. You know, like you look at the words, right?
Right.
But then if you see like a word like hot, that's one thing. But then your next word is dog, you know, like people who could read faster, they actually start seeing chunks of words and they get big meaning. And anyway, so going back and back skipping and regressing is a big, you know, it's an obstacle to being a better reader. And then the fifth obstacle is something I know you know a lot about is belief, you know, limiting beliefs, you know, and, you know that all behavior is belief driven. All behavior is belief driven. And so one of the challenges people have is that, you know, they need to overcome certain challenges about, you know, the beliefs about, you know, who they are, beliefs about how smart they are. You know, we have beliefs about, you know, what we're worth financially and who we are as leaders or as entrepreneurs or as parents and such. And so some people, when you dig a little bit deeper with people, they find that, you know, they have this challenge of a limiting belief that they picked up when they were children. Only even a lot of public speaking fears came from reading. Even, you know, when you first learn how to read, you would pass around a book and have to stand up or read out loud in front of your classroom. You know, that's a lot of pressure, right? And you start associating that kind of fear of making mistakes and or embarrassment to public speaking. And so a lot of people have that learned helplessness, kind of like the, you know, the old story about an elephant in a circus. You wonder why he or she can't just pull away from that rope, you know, pull the whole tent down. Well, because since that elephant was born, you know, he's had a rope around him and a stake in the ground, and it pulled for weeks. But then it learned in its mind that it can't, that it's powerless. And then even when it grown up big and strong, it still couldn't pull itself out because there's a mental block.
Yeah, and that actually, I tell a story about that. And there was a famous incident, I think it was in the 60s now, where there was, I think, 12 elephants that died in a circus fire because of that. And they were tied with a flimsy rope to a railing used in, you know, a crowd control railing that any one of them could have picked up. But that was that limiting belief. I mean, imagine 12 elephants dying in a fire because of that. So, yeah, I understand that. So then the five, just to sort of recap then, is the lack of education, the lack of focus, sub-vocalization, regression, and then limiting belief. That's the five, right?
That's correct.
And so when you have the hurdles, and I suppose I'm going to move around a little bit here, because obviously, you know, we're not going to be able to solve people's speed reading or mine on this call. And I know you have programs for that, which, I mean, by the way, sounds so exciting, especially when we start, how I asked you the original question, when someone like a Warren Buffett talks about wasting 10 years of life, and then we talk about just being able to improve our, even if we just double, even if we went from 250 to 500, you know, doubling our productivity when it comes to that, and then coming back to this joy of reading, once we have that belief that we can, we start to love what we do, and then the kind of books that open up to us, because, you know, you're starting to pull more books off the shelf. And I love that, not shelf, what did you call it, shelf learning instead of self-help,
Self-help, it is. I mean, just think about it also, like if you could read better, you'd be doing it more. Like if I could play golf, like some of the top golf pros, you know, if I could do anything better, you'd want to do it more and you'd find more joy out of it also. Probably golf is probably a bad example for me, but
so let me ask you a question, because I'm sure for me, you know, how does someone like yourself, obviously, you have an incredible heart and incredible passion. Where does someone start off one day saying, hey, you know, there's a whole world there that I didn't understand around the brain? I know a lot of what we've learned around the brain has happened in the last 12 years, and we're learning more and more new things about the brain and what's possible. But how does someone like you start out as a kid? I know that you're a huge comic book fan, so you must have read thousands of comic books. How did you start in this journey to become, to do what you do? Because, I mean, you work with some of the greatest minds on the planet now. I know that, you know, you work with Richard Branson, you've been on stage with the Dalai Lama, and I could go on and on and on. But that's an incredible place to be in the world where people come to you and your skills are so recognized. And I mean, take me back as a young boy. When did you get to this crossroads and choose it?
Well, no, I appreciate that. I mean, I think everybody has their journey that they're on. And, you know, speaking of Richard Branson and superheroes, you know, I learned reading comic books, and I'm still to this day like a comic book geek. But recently I got the chance to introduce one of my heroes, Stan Lee, who's the creator of Spider-Man and X-Men and Avengers. And I got to introduce him to Richard Branson. And when I picked him up in the car, you know, we were in LA, so we got to spend an hour together just stuck in traffic, you know, in the back there. And he was telling me these stories, Stan Lee was, about Spider-Man. And he said this catchphrase that everyone on this call, you know, everyone's listening, has heard before. It says, with great power comes great responsibility. With great power comes great responsibility. And I kind of meditated on that when he said it, and I said, I agree. And also, kind of like inverse is also true, that with great responsibility comes great power. With great responsibility comes great power. You know, when we take responsibility for our lives, you know, financially, our health, our relationships, you know, our business, then all of a sudden we have a whole lot more power to be able to affect it and others. And so I guess, speaking of that, going through life, I never really took a lot of responsibility for my own learning. In fact, I was just not a great learner. And it's hard for some people to imagine that after they've seen me perform and they find out, you know, for a while I read a book a day and all this information. But I struggled. I struggled through school. You know, like I don't know if it was because I had a bad, really bad head injury. When I was 5 years old, I went headfirst into a radiator. And I was knocked out. I mean, I still have stitches on my head and the side here and everything. But I mean, just throughout my school year, reading was not a fun thing for me. It was a real chore, and I would avoid it and like the plague. And then when I got to college, and I don't usually share this too much, but the quick of it is when I got to college, I was ready to make a difference. I wanted to get back on track. And really, this was my chance to start over. And I took a lot of classes my first year, and I was not prepared. You know, this school system, as I talked about, you know, taught me what to learn, but not really how to learn. And I was overloaded. I was overwhelmed. And I don't know if you could relate to this. Just, you know, you have goals in your life that you want to be able to achieve, but it just seems like so much work. And it just, the harder you work, you won't get the kind of rewards for it, you know, quite, you know, the way it was. And I needed a break. So I went to go visit a friend of mine and his family out on the West Coast. And the parents were really, really successful. And the father took me for a walk, you know, outside of his home. And he had a great home on the water and the helicopter pad, but not just financially. He was just, you know, he was a giver. You know, he had great relationships, you know, good health, and he was making a difference. And he asked me a question about what I wanted in life. what I wanted to be, what I want to do, what I want to have, what I want to share. And honestly, I didn't have a lot of answers. And he made me write it down. And after an hour of just kind of forcing me to do it, this little exercise, I ended up coming up with a list. And it ended up being my first bucket list, if you will. And then he asked to see it. And I really didn't want to share it with him because I didn't want to be judged, right? You know, because I was 18 years old. And he looks at it, grabs it out of my hand, he looks at it and tells me I'm this close to everything on that list. And I'm taking my index fingers and putting them about 8 inches apart. And I was just thinking, there's no way. I mean, I'm just, give me 3 lifetimes. I don't think I could achieve that stuff. And then he takes his index fingers and then he puts it the side of my temples, meaning that it was my brain, you know, it was my learning, it was my mind. And he walks me into his home, into a room. And this room is wall to wall, floor to ceiling, covered in books. And I've never been into somebody's personal library before. You know, and now I have a kind of a library like that myself. It's kind of funny when I think about it. And he starts to grab these books and hand them to me. And there's these, like, you know, these biographies of these amazing men and women throughout time. You know, whether it's Da Vinci or it's Abraham Lincoln or Einstein or these individuals. And also starts giving me these books in the area of personal development, like Think and Grow Rich. These are the classics, right? That we. Think and Grow Rich, How to Win Friends and Influence People, the, you know, Psycho-Cybernetics, The Power of Thinking Big. And I'm just automatically, I'm just thinking like, oh my goodness, what is he doing? You know, I have so much to read as it is. And I actually tell him, you know, I can't read any of these because I'm also overloaded with what I need to for school. And he looks me in the eyes and he says, Jim, don't let school get in the way of your education. Don't get in the way of my education. And I was like, oh, wow. And he makes me commit to reading 3 of these books a week. 3 of these books. And now, keep in mind, I don't read 3 books a year. And he wants me to read 3 books a week. And I automatically tell him I can't. And then he basically accused me of fighting for my limitations. And he goes back to the list and asks me how committed I am to the things on that list. And then so I make the agreement to do it. Fast forward, I end up going back to school. And now I have all the things I need to learn and all the things I want to learn, and I can't keep up. And I'm not, in order to keep my agreement, I'm not eating, I'm not sleeping, you know, I'm not taking care of myself. And I end up passing out in public out of sheer exhaustion, waking up in the hospital, hooked up to all these IVs, thinking, oh my goodness, you know, like I just like lost, I mean, my health was just so deteriorated. And I just said, there has to be a better way. And when I thought of that, at that moment, literally, and I don't know if this is like law of attraction or something in the universe, the nurse comes in with a mug, and on the mug is a picture of Albert Einstein, and it has a quote on it that says, the same level of thinking that's created the problem won't solve the problem. And I was like, wow, the same level of thinking that's created the problem won't solve the problem. You know, and it goes back to the famous definition of insanity, you know, doing the same things over and over again, expecting a different result. And so I needed something to change. I literally, my health, my existence, you know, needed something to change. And I started to get curious. So to answer your question, how I got on this path was my inspiration was my desperation. My inspiration was my desperation. I got extremely curious, like my life depended on it, to solve this riddle. And the riddle was, how do we really learn? You know, how do we learn how to learn? And how can I teach others to do the same? And then once I started, you know, asking this question, answers started to pop up in the form of books I would see and conversations I would hear. And I would really make my study, you know, that's what I would study. And then automatically, almost like night and day, my life in terms of my academic and my learning transformed. I started becoming very conscious and curious about the things I was reading, the methods of how I was learning things and how I could learn it better. That success was not just about working harder. I still to this day work hard, but it was about working smarter also. And then I committed to, once I started getting great results with it, sharing it with the people around me, and then eventually it changed. And then since then I've done these programs at, you know, 30 universities, and then eventually these kids have, you know, parents that work at law firms and Fortune 500 companies, and then we just started traveling the world. And my mission is to positively impact millions of brains, to be able to awaken the genius that I know everybody has inside of them. And then as a byproduct, you know, you don't know who's listening to this right now. And they could be you know, just, you know, working at a shop or, you know, somewhere, you know, over in another country or a developing country, and they learn how to learn, and they could apply it towards their own gifts, and maybe they cure cancer, you know, or they solve some of the grand challenges of the planet, you know, at the very least solving our, you know, our own personal challenges.
You know, you, by the way, thanks for that. I know you don't share that story very often, and I feel very honored that you did. And it really, I think for all of us, and for me especially, you know, I, like you said, we're all on a journey, and there's moments of that same desperation that we all encounter. This idea of unlocking the genius in your mission to unlock the genius. And I remember when I watched you on stage training, and just that there's this real depth of certainty that you have. There's this real calmness and this real sort of joy of connection of people. I mean, it really does ooze out of you. I know that I'm not sure if your book's written yet, The Art of Warmth. Have you finished your book yet?
No, it'll be coming out. We're working on it right now, and it's a real passion project for us. We want to help to be able to participate. You know, our two passions are the brain and then business, a really conscious, caring business. So the art of warmth, you know, as opposed to the art of war, where it's based on win and lose and manipulation, the art of warmth is all about ushering. It's about a framework for caring commerce, for ushering in a caring economy. And it's not about just about making a dollar. But it's also about making a difference.
And so if we look at these combinations, as we start to see, you know, this how you got on this path and really what this path is really about, there's a deep, deep mission there. But there's this really, I know one of your great programs that everyone I've ever spoken to says it's an absolute must, this superhero you. You believe that everyone has a superpower. And I want us to sort of play around with that whole idea of superpowers, of what that superpower means to you, and how when you look at people, when you talk to people, you kind of see the genius before you help unlock it. You're kind of aware of their genius. Can you share a little bit about how this superhero you came about and really what it's about, the program?
Sure. Superhero you, and that's Y-O-U. It's all about, for me, the metaphor of a superhero is I believe that there's a superhero in all of us. And a superhero for me is somebody that uses their unique strengths, their unique skills, their unique life experience, their unique talents, whatever it is. And I believe everybody has them, is and they use those assets to be able to serve the world, you know, and that's what a hero does. And in the process, they inspire other people to do the same. And I think that's what a superhero is. And I really think that planet Earth, you know, our world right now, is hungry and needs superheroes. Like, I think the world right now needs more of us, each of us, to show up. And that's really, you know, our challenge right now. And so superhero you, reason why we add the Y-O-U in it, is it's not about looking outside, you know, and I learn from everybody, you know, every single person that I meet, you know, I like to walk away from with some kind of insight in terms of how I could help grow. And so I have more to give also. But it's about you, meaning that you're not waiting from some, you know, superhero, you know, with big muscles and a cape shooting lasers out of his eyes to save you. You know, you're the hero in you. And that's what it's all about. It's about the challenges. A lot of people aren't shown how to be able to unlock or unleash those superpowers, you know. And I believe that, you know, in society, it's really challenging because, you know, even if you look at, for example, like how we're tested academically, like SATs, you know, it talks about there's two parts of the SATs. There's the verbal and then there's the math. And, you know, that's what's reinforced and rewarded. But what about people who have an incredible intelligence, you know, in their creativity? They're an incredible artist. They're an incredible musician. They're an incredible physical athlete or what have you. I mean, I think everybody has these unique skills. But the challenge is with IQ, it just kind of measures only an aspect of it. And it also has, you know, an idea in it that's built in saying that, you know, intelligence is fixed. And we know that's absolutely not true, you know, especially with the work that we do. You know, when we show somebody literally how to be faster, smarter, better, you know, when they can read faster, they can remember more, they can remember names and faces and client information, they start giving speeches without notes, they can learn a foreign language faster, you know, PIN numbers, passcodes, you know, jokes. I mean, you name it. I mean, there's so many different applications. And what I love about the training that we do in the level of the brain is that once we show people how to learn, then they go out there and they express it with their passions. because learning is a meta skill. Meta skill meaning it's a skill above other skills. And if you become a faster, better learner, then that helps you in every area of your life. It helps your business. It helps you, you know, in your listening skills. It helps you with your finances. It certainly helps you with your health and relationships. Relationships is you know, like remembering dates and anniversaries, and you remember to take out the garbage, you know, like, you know, remember those little moments. And, you know, quick learning is yes, it is a set of strategies and tools, but it's also an attitude. It's an attitude of looking at the world, you know, as a superhero, like really being curious, you know, remembering what it's like to be a child, to look at things fascinated and, you know, really looking at a level of discovery, you know, where you have enthusiasm and excitement. And I think sometimes as we grow older, and I don't mean just chronological age or biological age, I mean the age of our mind and our heart. You know, there's a new book out there called Use Your Brain to Change Your Age. Use Your Brain to Change Your Age by Dr. Daniel Amen. And if the name sounds familiar, he's written 30 books on the brain. He's done more brain scans than anyone else in the country, his clinics across the country. His first book, Change Your Brain, Change Your Life, one of his earlier books, it was a huge special and you know, best-selling book. But this new book, Use Your Brain to Change Your Age, is also a New York Times best-selling book. And we met because he actually interviewed me for that book. And he documents all our, you know, work that we do with quick learning. And there's a huge relationship between not only your brain and your body, but also your body and your brain. That there are studies out there now done with these nuns that, you know, when we were talking about aging before, yes, you could grow older, but in some ways you could grow better. But they find that about 1/3 of your memory is genetic and biological, but that, you know, the 2/3 of your mind and your brain is lifestyle. It's how you use it. It's like your foods that you're eating. It's the mental exercises that you're doing. And there was a study done with these super nuns. They wanted to find, it was on the cover of Time magazine. They wanted to find out how these women specifically were living well into their 70s, 80s, 90s, 100s, and above. And they found out through their research, and actually they put it in a book called Aging with Grace, and they found out that it was half of it had to do with their faith and their gratitude, you know, that those deep emotions, which I think is so important. But the other half had to do with throughout their entire life, they were keeping such a high level of mental activity. Do you know what I mean? Absolutely. Throughout their entire life, they were learning all the time. They were playing cards. They were having deep conversations. They were reading. And they're saying that the reason why these women were living so long is because they were keeping their brains active. And it's a beautiful thing.
You know, there's I was just thinking, I only have a couple more questions here, but the when you were talking about this, you know, the superhero in each of us, and this, I was thinking about, you know, a mom at home right now, who's overwhelmed. You talked about being at that crossroads of your own, you know, finding yourself with an IV stuck in your arm. You know, maybe she's running two jobs and she's, you know, she's got three kids. Maybe her husband's like, I'm just trying to think of a sort of a scenario where someone is completely overwhelmed listening to us chat about this. And the superhero in her, how does someone in situations like that start to unlock their own genius and superhero? What's a way that, you know, that they can come off this and say, hey, there is a way I can start doing this today at home, right?
Yeah. Well, first of all, to that person who's listening to this right now, you know, let me start with this. And I get goosebumps thinking about it. One of my very first students, when I first started sharing these skills with other people, she read 30 books in 30 days. And that's remarkable, right? Just because people do not do that, a book a day. Because we do these programs that last about 5 weeks, because I think in order to change a habit, it takes about 21 to 30 days to be able to learn a new skill. And we know that through the law of 21, if you, you know, in psychology. And, you know, and that's whether you want to learn how to type, you want to be able to drive or tie your shoes. It takes about 21 days to be able to do it unconsciously. So our programs are 5 weeks long. We meet once a week for 5 weeks. And what I would say is, you know, this woman read 30 books in 30 days over those 5 weeks. And I wanted to find out, not how she did it. Obviously, I know how she did it, but I want to know why she did it. I'm always interested in motivation. What's your motive for action? You know, even when I talk about memory training, people say they have trouble remembering names all the time. But if I tell them that, well, there's a suitcase of $100,000 for you or your favorite charity, if you just remember the name of the next person you meet, all of a sudden, they all remember that name because it has to do with motivation. Because I think reasons precede results. reasons precede results. Anyway, what her motivation was to read those 30 books was she was her mother was given was dying of cancer, and her doctors gave her 60 days to live. And the books she was reading during our course were books on health, and I was like, wow, I was blown away, and I just said, you know, I wished her luck. And anyway, fast forward 6 months later, she gives me a call, and she has tears of joy in her voice. And what ended up happening was, I get a little choked up just talking about this, but her mother not only survived, but she's really starting to thrive. And the doctors don't even know how, but her mother attributes it to everything that she learned from her daughter that learned it all from those books. And, you know, that's really why I'm on this path. You know, because I know people out there are struggling, you know, in a lot of different ways. And there's information out there that could really help you. The challenge is, you know, do we have the time or the focus to be able to learn it and learn it fast and apply it? And that's when I learned also that ideas have impact. And I'll do anything to help people learn these ideas faster, better, smarter. And so what I would say to the person that's listening to this, that's struggling, that you have multiple jobs, you have your own business, you know, also, or maybe you're starting a brand new business and you want to grow a business, or, you know, you're working for a company and you just, how do you balance family and friends and everything? I would say that, first of all, I have mad respect for you, that you could do it. And because we've all heard these amazing stories of how people have these amazing lives, you know, because they made a decision. They made a decision, you know, and a real decision, you know, meaning they say, you know, this is what I'm doing. They burn the bridges. But first of all, you have my crazy mad respect and appreciation for you even listening to this call. Because if you're listening to this anyway, then you're a winner in my eyes. You know, most people, you know, are dreamers, but they're not doers. And so, you know, you're not just interested, or you're not just a complainer, you're a committer. So if you're listening to it, you absolutely have what it takes. The other thing I would say is take care of yourself. And I say it like this, that a lot of people that we attract, what they'll do is they're there for everybody else, you know, their work, their family, their friends, their children, but they're not there for themselves as much. And, you know, I think it's selfish, honestly, to be there for everybody else but you, that you need to be able to dedicate the time and the commitment to do something good for you, you know, whether it's the stuff that we're teaching or something that's just reading a good book for yourself, or just taking extra rest or going to the gym, because, you know, you can't be good for anyone else unless you're good for yourself. You know, I call these people superheroes because they're what I also call grow givers. You know, a lot of people are out there, you know, as somebody that wants to give, but they're not growing, you know, to be able to replenish the well. And I would say there's easy things. The easy things to do is improve your memory and read faster. That's easy. I mean, you could, you know, go, you know, to any of our programs, and there's lots of free information even. So there's a lot of information that can increase your ability to do things right now. What I would say is make the decision to do something that's good for you. And then I think you'll find that once you start sharpening the saw, it's kind of like if you have lots of wood that you need to cut. A lot of people, when I'm looking around, I'm seeing them trying to cut this wood with a dull blade. That take a moment, take a half a day for yourself, sharpen your saw, and then you can go through this work with a whole lot more ease, you know, less stress, less anxiety, get better results in less time, and whatever you want to be able to do that for. So I guess my message to aspiring superheroes is you're already a superhero. What you need to do is transcend, which is ending the trance that you're not, you know, and then make the decision to do something right now that's good for yourself, you know. And I like to focus on learning, because I think learning how to learn helps make everything easier.
You know, Jim, I want to thank you. Excuse me. I wonder if there's a question I should have asked, and maybe, you know, if you were sitting here asking you questions, is there, as a last question, one that you would love to answer that maybe I could have asked and maybe haven't asked you yet?
Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, I could talk to you for hours and hours, David, you know, and so, you know, I would love to, you know, offer some kind of something to your listeners that they could actually, you know, maybe we could offer some videos and such for people, so they could be able to watch some videos on how to remember names or how to be able to read faster and such like that. Happy to be able to give you a link or something like that to share with your listeners so they could benefit from that. And I would say that, you know, one of the things I really wish everybody that's listening right now is I wish them have a life that they wish to lead. I think we're only happiest when we're fulfilling our soul's purpose, and only you know what that is. And you have a unique gift that no one else has, or few of us do. And I think the world deserves more of that to show up. So I wish everyone, you included, David, you know, your life be full of lots of life, lots of love, you know, lots of laughter, and of course, you know, lots of learning.
And we look forward to your book, The Art of Warmth. I'm going to get you back here because this has been remarkable. I want to thank you. And like I said, I had goosebumps a number of times during this call, and I'd love to. I could sit and talk and listen to you all day long. It's remarkable, and you've certainly inspired me to want to do and learn more. I mean, I teach accelerated learning, interestingly enough, and yeah, a whole new world has just opened up for me just listening to you. So thank you so much for your genius.
David, thank you so much for the gifts that you share, and thank you for everyone who's listening.
Oh, I hope you enjoyed the show, and don't forget, it's those small things. You can make a small adjustment here, a little tweak there. It's nuances and distinctions, and that's where how you get to leading an extraordinary life. You don't have to change everything at once. And really remember that to be kind to yourself. This is a journey. This is a climb. It's wonderful. And you're never going to look back. You're going through hard stuff sometimes. You don't look back and wish it never happened. You look back and you say, I'm glad it happened. And it's hard to know that when you're in it. So don't worry about it too much. Again, remember, it's a magnificent journey. And don't forget, you can come play with me. I have another show called Amplified Network Marketing. Again, please come join me there. Go to amplifiednetworkmarketing.com and look for our events. We do events all over the world. And if you want to come play with us, I would love to meet you personally, get to know you, and begin our journey of friendship. So with that being said, listen to these words and think about your life and what do you want? How extraordinary will it become? And how are you going to amplify yourself, your life, so that you can truly have a kick-ass life? It is the climb, ladies and gentlemen. And guess what? I will definitely see you on the other side.
That was kick-ass.